I think that I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to anybody out there.
It's the same answer that the President of the United States gave.
I believe that marriage is the union between a man and a woman.
I think that it should be between a man and a woman. Thank you.
It's the same answer that many people gave.
I am not somebody who promotes same-sex marriage.
She gave an honorable answer. She gave an answer from her heart. And I think for that, she has to be commended.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
It is not a question that is often asked, and when the answer is given, it's usually given with that look on the face as though, why would you even ask such a question? Is Islam a religion of peace? In spite of the mounting evidence, especially in the last decade or so, and in spite of a long history, we continue to hear from those who not only claim to know better, but should know better. In particular, our political leaders, that Islam is essentially a peaceful religion, that there's nothing dangerous in the ideology that is Islam. We're told that radical Islam is the product of Islam somehow unlawfully wedded to a radical totalitarian political ideology. Is that true? Is Islam a religion of peace? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Monday afternoon, the 18th of May. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org. We're going to be talking with Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch, answering the question, is Islam a religion of peace? Then Scott Klusendorf will join us. We'll get his reaction to remarks made yesterday by President Barack Obama on abortion when he spoke at the commencement at Notre Dame University. Our first guest is Robert Spencer. He's director of Jihad Watch. He's author of 8 books on Islam, including his latest, Stealth Jihad, How Radical Islam is Subverting America Without Guns or Bombs. Robert, welcome back.
I'm very happy to be back. Thank you.
We're told that quote-unquote radical Islam is, and dangerous, the dangerous strain of Islam is the result of Islam mixed with a totalitarian political ideology, or that we've really radicalized Islam by waging a war on terrorism. Before all those things, was Islam radical?
Yes, in the sense that Islam has taught warfare against unbelievers and the necessity to subjugate those unbelievers as inferiors under the rule of Islamic law, Islam has always been, in its essence, radical. Doesn't mean that every Muslim is radical or every Muslim is interested in carrying out this program, but this program is part and parcel of the core teachings of Islam. And as such, there is no real moderate Islam. There are moderate Muslims, but there's no real moderate Islam.
So what is the real Islam? I mean, there are those westernized Muslims who will say the Islam I practice is essentially a benevolent and benign religion. Is theirs the real Islam?
Well, Todd, you know, I guess it depends on your definition of benevolent and benign. Some people will say that the rule of Islamic law is benevolent and benign, and the responsibility that Muslims have to impose Islamic law on unbelievers is a positive thing, a mercy from God, and thus not something that unbelievers ought to reject. And, of course, that's an Islamic point of view. But from a non-Muslim's point of view, it's anything but benevolent and benign. Islamic law denies equality of rights in numerous ways to non-Muslims as well as to women. And the problem that we are facing is that there is no sect or school of Islamic law that does not teach that it's part of the responsibility of Muslims worldwide to wage war against unbelievers and to impose Islamic law over them by military means or by whatever means are possible and necessary. So to say that the real Islam is benign is really not to be specific enough. We have to understand what exactly is meant by all the salient terms involved.
If you had to choose a place on the globe, a locale where Islam holds political and religious sway, that in your mind is kind of the example of Islam par excellence, that is, this is Islam being consistent with itself in practice all the way down to the city streets, where would you choose, Robert?
Well, I think that we should go to the answer to that question to Muslims themselves. and to Islamic states themselves and how they describe themselves. And you'll find two states in the world that say that their laws are based on Islamic law, that with the exception of things like traffic laws and so on, that everything comes from Islamic Sharia, and consequently it is a fully authentic Islamic state. And those countries are Saudi Arabia and Iran, neither of which have very good human rights records, and neither of which are at all hospitable to non-Muslims, and so, or to women. And so it is a telling thing that the states that profess to be the exponents of pure Islam are virulent, violent, intransigent, intolerant states. Now, a lot of Muslims in the West in particular will tell you, oh, no, Saudi Arabia and Iran do not represent Islam at all. They have themselves twisted and hijacked Islam. The difficulty is that all the traditional canons of Islamic law do accord with the laws that are in place in Saudi Arabia and Iran. And there is no system of Islamic law that is constituted in any other way.
How do you explain the opinion, or at least the stated opinion, of our political leaders, almost to a person, that Islam is a religion of peace, that there's nothing to fear, there's nothing dangerous about Islam per se?
Well, I think that this is a statement, an assertion that is made in order to support various political policies, ranging from alliances to Islamic states like Saudi Arabia, to the immigration policies that do not restrict but indeed encourage immigration by Muslims into the United States. And so the administrations of Bush and Obama were both committed in various ways, were and are, to the proposition that Islam is a religion of peace, because if they say anything else, then there follows from that statement the question of, well, then why are you behaving in this way? You know, why are you acting as if Islam is a religion of peace when it manifestly isn't? There is a great amount of U.S. policy that is built on the supposition that Islam is a religion of peace. Now, where does it come from if it's inaccurate? I think that it is the result of a very skillful an effective international propaganda campaign that has been quite long-standing among Muslims and Islamic leaders, and that also it is something that American officials, even if they know better, think they have to affirm as a matter of policy because they fear the implications of not affirming it. They are afraid that if they do not accept, if they do not admit of the idea that if they do not acknowledge, if they do not claim that Islam is a religion of peace, then the whole Islamic world will rise up against the United States instead of just the places where we're facing conflict now. Now, I don't see how that necessarily follows. In fact, I don't even see why the president or anybody in the administration, whoever the president is, needs to say anything, really, about whether Islam is peaceful or not. George Bush seemed to set the standard here and appointed himself America's chief theologian, and Barack Obama has continued with this. But really, the president has no responsibility to define Islam. He just has a responsibility to defend us from our enemies. And if he were to name those enemies properly and honestly and fully, then he would be dealing with a lot of groups and individuals that right now enjoy approval and sanction at highest levels because of this dogma that Islam is a religion of peace. But even that, I think, does not necessarily mean that he has to make any statement about the nature of Islam at all.
Before we talk about radical Islam and America, give us kind of a state of Islam in Western Europe, because they seem to be decades ahead of us, at least in terms of population density and also in terms of the success of Islamists in enacting Sharia law on the streets.
Well, certainly, yes. Islam is growing very quickly in Europe, and the populations are growing so fast that the great historian Bernard Lewis has actually said that Europe will be Islamic by the end of this century. He was referring to demographic trends, which of course can always change, but if they continue as they are, then we will see majority Muslim states in Western Europe, and that could mean Muslim governments, an Islamic Republic of France or Great Britain, for example, and that could spell great danger for the United States if with the nuclear arsenals of those countries now pointed at the great Satan of America. And meanwhile, we already see also in the in Western Europe the idea that there are areas of the various countries, which do not any longer submit to the rule of the law of those lands. There are Islamic enclaves in Sweden, in Belgium, in England, various other places, in France, where the law of the land is essentially not respected, and Sharia, Islamic law, is already asserted as the dominant law. And so the implications of that are very grave, and those areas are only going to increase with the increasing immigration and nonstop immigration from Muslim countries.
We're talking with Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, author of 8 books on Islam, including his latest, Stealth Jihad, How Radical Islam is Subverting America Without Guns or Bombs. I want your answer to the question, is Islam a religion of peace? And I want to hear from you. Our email address on this Monday afternoon, May the 18th, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our phone number, 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MY-IE. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. When we come back, we'll have Robert Spencer define what he calls stealth jihad. 1-877-623-6943 or talkback@issuesetc.org. Is Islam a religion of peace? 1-877-623-MY-IE or talkback@issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. 10 more minutes with Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch. Is Islam a religion of peace? Robert, you talk about stealth holy war, stealth jihad. What do you mean by that term?
Stealth jihad is the initiative by Islamic groups in the West, including the United States, to spread Islamic law here without terrorism. Most people have focused exclusively on terrorism and have talked about the terror threat and the possibility that there will be more attacks like 9/11 on American soil, and that is a possibility, and that certainly is something that we need to keep in mind and guard ourselves against as much as we can. At the same time, however, it has not been recognized, but is nonetheless happening, that Islamic jihadists are trying to advance their agenda of imposing Islamic law upon the West by means other than terrorism. And that is what I refer to under the rubric of stealth jihad.
So give us an example. What does that look like, the imposition of Islamic law, either at the grand or the lesser scale?
Well, take a very small thing, and this is one of the main ways that the stealth jihad advances, by means of very small-scale initiatives, so that everybody always says, well, what's the big deal? You know, this is just a little thing. And it's only cumulatively, and once one sees what groups are behind these initiatives, that it becomes something more serious. For example, in Minneapolis, the Minneapolis International Airport, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a group that's dedicated in its own words to eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house, the Muslim Brotherhood's arm in the United States, the Muslim American Society, issued a religious decree saying that cab drivers, if they were Muslims, could not, at the Minneapolis airport, carry passengers who were carrying alcoholic beverages, because Islam forbids Muslims not only to drink alcohol, but also to carry it. And so the problem that we face in this is that it was presented as a matter of religious freedom and let the cab drivers be free to practice their religion. But what they were trying to do, in fact, was to impose Islamic law over the non-Muslims at the airport, and essentially to say that if you are not going to abide by Islamic law regarding alcohol at the airport, then you're not going to get service. And so it was an attempt to say that where Islamic law and American American law conflict, then it's American law that has to be what gives way, not Islamic law. And so this is something that is common, actually two things that this incident demonstrates that are common to the stealth jihad initiatives in the United States in general. One is there's invariably, Muslim Brotherhood involvement. The Muslim Brotherhood is the chief engine of this initiative in the U.S. And second, there is always the assertion of Islamic law and custom and the demand that American law and custom give way to Islamic sensibilities.
So in other words, this is a rather clever way of using a Western ideal, and in America, a Western sacrosanct Western constitutional right, freedom of religious expression and practice, against that very right in the end.
Yes. And it's really ultimately in service of a political agenda, one that would replace the United States Constitution with a very different system, with Islamic law that would institutionalize the subjugation of non-Muslims and deny the freedom of speech and the freedom of conscience. And so under the guise of religious freedom, this is a political initiative that is advancing. And I think that ultimately it has to be understood that it is a seditious political initiative and dealt with in that way rather than under the rubric of religion.
All right. You mentioned the Muslim Brotherhood. Are there Muslims in the West who are either openly or at least not behind closed doors talking about the kind of thing that you have just described?
Are there Muslims in the West who are talking about the stealth jihad in terms of opposing it?
No, who are talking about, okay, it's one day we would like to see America with a very different constitution or a very different
certainly.
System of laws.
Even widely, people who are widely known as moderates, Ibrahim Hooper, the spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is not, in any real sense, I don't believe, a moderate group, but one that is indeed dedicated to this Brotherhood initiative and was named an unindicted co-conspirator in a Hamas terror funding case last year. In any case, the spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations, Ibrahim Hooper, is on record saying that he would like to see the United States government become Islamic sometime in the future. I think most people don't realize the very radical implications of that statement and what a very different system America would be governed by were that to come to pass.
1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuezTC.org to St. Louis, where Jerry is on the line. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, hi, Todd. To your guest, Mr. Spencer, in Ontario, Canada, I understand Islamic Sharia law has been granted to the Muslims because something to the effect that Canada just got tired of trying to deal with them, so they gave them about 600,000, I believe, Muslims on the sort of close to our border in Ontario, and they're granted, is Sharia law. And then, can I ask you a question?
What's your question,
sure.
There, Jerry?
My question is: there's a report that Iran said that if Israel does, goes after Iran's nuclear power plants or anything, that there are cells all over America, and Iran will have them awakened to start blowing up. For shopping centers and like they're doing, in the Middle East and everything. Can you confirm that? And I'll hang up and listen.
Jerry, thank you very much. First questions first. What do we know about, in Canada, Sharia laws advance there?
Well, there are initiatives in Canada and in the UK and even in the US to allow for private arbitration courts that will settle marriage cases and things like that under the rules of Sharia, analogous to Jewish courts and Catholic courts that do the same kind of thing. The problem is that Jewish law and Catholic canon law only refer to believers, whereas Islamic law claims that authority over non-Muslims as well, and asserts a comprehensive political program. And so it's not so easy to separate out private arbitration from the governance of the state. And so I think there are going to be conflicts in Canada and in the UK and elsewhere as long as that kind of arbitration is allowed. Now, actually, Sharia arbitration courts were defeated in Canada a few years back. I'm not aware of what the caller is referring to in saying that they've been asserted, although I wouldn't be surprised because we know in America many, many, many cases of things that are defeated at the ballot box end up getting instituted anyway. And so it could be happening in Canada as well. Now, as far as the sleeper cells go, I have heard that also. I have no confirmation one way or the other.
It seems to me, if your thesis is correct, that a stealth jihad would not be best served by truck bombings, car bombings in the U.S. by sleeper cells.
Right. There is direct intelligence about that. In the book Stealth Jihad, I have a statement by an FBI official, an FBI agent, saying that he has intelligence from Hezbollah cells in the United States saying that they are not pursuing attacks in the United States right now because they realize that they would be a setback for their goals and that they can get more done by means of stealth initiatives rather than by terror attacks.
Herman's listening in Illinois. Thanks for being patient, Herman.
Yes, I'd like to ask Dr. Spencer, areas in the U.S. that now have a visible Muslim population, usually an immigrant population like the Detroit area, are there movements there to try to establish Sharia law to replace state and federal law?
Thank you very much, Herman.
There are enclaves, there are camps. Very, very, very secretive compounds in the United States where it does seem that Sharia law is already being asserted in those places. So far, there has not been a call for Sharia as such to be asserted over non-Muslims anywhere else in the United States, except for these stealth jihad initiatives that I've been referring to, where one element of Sharia is asserted and demanded as a matter of religious freedom.
With only about 20 seconds here, Robert, our time grows short. What do you say to people who say that folks like you are alarmists when it comes to Islam in the U.S.?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, we already see that the situation is more advanced in Europe than it is here. And I think that as things are going with the in terms of policy, we're only going to follow in Europe's footsteps. And so you want to see how the United States is going to be vis-a-vis Islam in 10 or 20 years, look at Europe today. And you want to see what's going to happen after that, you know, we'll see who was alarmist. Come back to me in 5 years, 10 years, and see if I look alarmist then.
Folks, you'll find links to both Stealth Jihad and to Jihad Watch under the on-demand page of our website, issuezetc.org, issuezetc.org. Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch. And he's author of 8 books on Islam, including his latest, Stealth Jihad, How Radical Islam is Subverting America Without Guns or Bombs. Robert, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, the last half hour of Issues Etc. today, we're going to spend with Scott Klusendorf. Of course, the president spent Sunday morning and afternoon in South Bend, Indiana, speaking at the commencement for Notre Dame. There was some protest, but by and large, his welcome there by the faculty, the staff, the administration, and the student body was pretty warm. He had a few things to say, and he did not mince words when it came to the issue of abortion. He talked openly about the differences between those who are for it and those who are against it, and he proposed that those who are for it and against it had common ground whereupon they could work to reduce the number of abortions. He got a lot of applause for suggestions like that. We're going to be getting Scott Klusendorf's reaction to what the president had to say at Notre Dame on Sunday, and your reaction as well, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Scott will join us after the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.